Welcome to Banking Reinvented, Commercial Banking Takeover. This limited series goes straight to the front lines of commercial banking. I'm Alex Jimenez, and in each episode, I'll be speaking with industry leaders about the bold shifts transforming the sector from rewiring relationship management to modernizing trade finance, payments, and onboarding. Powered by Backbase Unlock Growth Mode movement, these conversations pull back the curtain on what it takes to move from maintenance to momentum. Welcome to Banking Reinvented, Unlock Growth Mode. I'm Alex Jimenez. Today's guest has coached over 80,000 bankers across five decades. And if you've ever been in one of his classes, you know it's not theory. It's real talk, real tactics. Jack Hubbard is here to share how commercial bankers can sell with trust, not pressure, and build client partnerships that actually last. Welcome, Jack.
Alex, it's great to be with you. I really appreciate this opportunity.
So, Jack, you've been teaching bankers since before LinkedIn existed. What's one timeless principle you still see most banks ignoring today?
Yeah, Alex, I've been teaching bankers since before the telephone was invented. So I've been around a long time. It's fascinating to me. We've at least gotten past one issue, which is a lot of banks weren't allowing their bankers to actually use LinkedIn at the office. And it would be kind of like if you were using loan documentation or some loan pricing tool, but you could only use it at home. It's one hand behind your back. So we've at least gotten through that. What I still hear from bankers is, oh, this LinkedIn, you know, it's nothing more than a resume tool and things like that. And there's so many mistakes that bankers make, but I like to talk about it in terms of helping bankers trying to hit their LinkedIn peak. And so let's look at all four of those letters. The first one is philosophy. Why are you on LinkedIn? I think there's two bad reasons to be on LinkedIn. Number one, because everybody else is. Everybody at the bank's on LinkedIn, so I'm going to get on too. And I can't tell you the number of people that I talk to that can't even remember their password on LinkedIn. So just because everybody else is on, don't be a lemming and jump off the cliff. Number two, a lot of bankers view it as the new cold calling tool, and it's far from that. I get so many people doing what we call connect and pitch, which is I connect with you, let's have coffee. I connect with you, I have a product. And a lot of bankers still aren't getting that. So I would say, number one, philosophy. Why are you on? Number two, engagement. How am I engaging on LinkedIn? I like to connect with 3 to 5 people a week. I post content 3 to 5 days a week. And unfortunately, most bankers are very inconsistent with that. It's like, well, I'll publish once a month, or I'll comment on a post once a month. Engagement doesn't mean likes. I have this phrase that I always use when I speak to bankers. Lazy likes lack luster. Forget the likes. Comment. When someone posts something, if you comment back to them and you do it in a meaningful way with either sharing a best practice or asking a question or what have you, 10 words, has to be 10 words, then the poster gets a benefit and you get a benefit. The third thing in peak is authenticity. Be yourself. Everyone else is taken. So when you're on there, don't try to be Jack or Alex or Bryn Tilleman, my business partner. Be yourself. Do it in that particular way. And the last thing is knowledge. Unfortunately, 87% of bankers have never had any formal LinkedIn training around connecting it to the sales process beyond, well, I know how to get on, I've got a profile. And that's one of the reasons we at the Modern Banker started our process Mastering LinkedIn for Bankers, because bankers don't understand how to connect LinkedIn to the sales process. And look at me, I'm 75 years old, and I started using LinkedIn in my 60s. So I always saw LinkedIn as a powerful connecting, education, and value tool. And I'm going to go to my grave trying to help bankers understand that as well, Alex.
When I was head of digital at a bank,
I was asked to teach the bankers how to use LinkedIn. Obviously, all I knew was what I did, so I never tied it to the selling process, so they missed that part of the story. you say buyers today are researchers, self-educators, and collaborators. How does that change the role of a commercial relationship manager?
Well, it's pretty significant. One of the things I always tell bank presidents, because there's so many banks in the U.S. that have built their assets up by doing commercial real estate. And I always tell people that commercial real estate bankers are great, but if you try to get them to move over into the C&I space, it's going to be a real challenge because they're not very patient. And it takes a long time to build up that relationship or that trust, if you will. I read a sales book a week. This is the newest book I have read, and it is absolutely unbelievable. It's written by Matt Dixon, Rory Channer, Karen Freeman, and Ted McKenna. It's called The Activator. They did a lot of research on professional skills, professional buyers, lawyers, accountants, et cetera, and they wanted to find out what made one type of seller better than others. Activators. I like to call them resource managers, and we're going to talk about that in a second. But I'll tell you the biggest change in banking from a sales perspective, and that's the buyer. To your point, the buyer is more knowledgeable than ever before. They do, according to the book, about 60% of their research about a bank, about a banker, ahead of when the bank is going to actually call on them. So that's number one. Number two, the buyer thinks they know more than they really do. They know pretty surface stuff. Bankers are a lot more detailed. So I believe the banker of 2025 and going forward has got to be two really important things. Number one, an educator, to really help the buyer understand what they think they understand at a much deeper level. And the second thing is a detective. I always say that the buyer has the answers. The banker needs better questions, and we'll probably talk a little bit about that. But if the banker goes in with a mindset of trying to sell a product, they're not going to be very successful. They're going to be a commodity. What the banker of today has to do is to look at the buyer a little bit different and try to understand their objectives and priorities. And the only way you do that is through asking great questions.
Absolutely. Yeah. Asking the questions and listening to the answer.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting. We got 2 years, it's so fascinating. I always ask bankers when I'm in a classroom with them, when did your child first learn to talk? And they'll say, 6 months, 9 months, whatever. And I said, and when did you teach your child to listen? And I don't get a lot of answers. We are really good, aren't we, at talking, but we aren't terribly good at listening. And I always say, you listen in two ways. You listen to talk, or you listen to understand. And one of the big problems commercial bankers have is they're so experienced at what they do, they sort of know the buyer's answer before it's answered. But they got to understand that it's the first time the buyer is telling them. And if they understand, it's not just what the buyer buys, it's why they buy it that's so important. And that's what I'm trying to listen for.
Mm-hmm. So along the same lines, what's the biggest mindset shift commercial lenders need to make to meet modern buyer expectations?
Yeah, I think that we've got to look at ourselves a little bit different in terms of how we view what we do for the buyer. First of all, too often the buyer is not in the center of our focus. The buyer is a victim. So we've got to put the buyer in the center of our focus. And to make that happen, one of the shifts I've tried to do with my clients is to help them understand that relationship managers are fine, but they tend to be more passive resource managers. So this is the change. Bankers need to be resource managers. They need to understand how to provide value, how to educate, how to help the buyer. And I'll give you a couple of success practices. I'm guest on a lot of podcasts, and I do a lot of podcasts. I have a weekly podcast. And one of the things that really bugs me about guests on podcasts is they don't talk practically. And you kind of teed me up for that on the front end. So let me tell you two things that bankers are doing to become resource managers. The first is a tool that's so simple. It's called 3-Before-8. And here's how this works. Every day, 5 days a week, the first thing the banker does when they get to the office is they send out 3 emails with something of value. And it could be a white paper, an article, a podcast, a lead, could be anything. 3 of those. And they could go to 2 clients and a center of influence or 2 prospects and a client, just 3, and to arrive before 8 a.m. when the buyer is starting to look at their emails, because I want my email at the top of the email stack, not at the bottom. And that's why a lot of bankers say, well, I'll just do it at night before I go home. But then your email is at the bottom. I want them to have one of the first things they see is your email. So 3-Before-8, I can tell you, and if you don't follow up, if you don't say, do you like me now? Did you get my white paper? Do you want to buy something? Just leave it alone, lay it lightly on the table and pull back. So that's the first thing, 3-Before-8, really powerful. And the CRM system becomes a lot more of a partner at that point, because what the banker will do is in the record of the person they sent the email to, they'll put in what they sent them so they can go back and see what they sent them 6 months ago. That's the first thing. The second thing is interesting. About 80% of CEOs at companies either look at their emails and look at LinkedIn for the first time on Saturday, or they look at them again on Saturday. So I have a client that does something called 75 client. The 7 refers to 7 a.m. to 8 a.m., their local time, and the 5 refers to I send 5 things. So between 7 and 8 a.m., either on LinkedIn, because they're very likely there, and by the way, I know they're on because I can see their little green dot. If I see the green dot, I know they're on and I'll send them something. So I'll send them something of value either via email or via LinkedIn. And again, just leave it alone. When you do that, when you do the law of small numbers, when you provide that kind of tangible value, what you're creating for the buyer, whether they're a prospect or a client, is mind share. Because when the buyers, I always say, the two most important thing in sales are PIM and MIM. People in motion and money in motion. And when I have money in motion every day at a business, I want that buyer to have my name in their mind. I want them to say, call the banker, Jack Hubbard, because he can probably help me. Well, how did I do that? I helped them by being a resource manager.
And when you talk about resources, and I used to work with a relationship manager that was just excellent at this. He would do exactly what you said. In the morning, he would go, and this is pre-LinkedIn days, right? He would go and read newspapers, magazines, et cetera. And he was very specific about the industries that he worked in. So he was always sending out articles, tidbits, hints, all kinds of things like that to his clients and prospects. And once LinkedIn, he then started doing that, just exactly what you were saying. I wonder, he probably went to one of your courses.
Well, I don't know if that's true. I'd like to think that.
But it wasn't always like your company, your bank's white paper or anything about your product, but it was something that wasn't maybe not even related to banking, but it was related to that person's business. And I found that really fascinating.
And what's the reaction to the receiver? They love it. Before, when I started in training 36 years ago, I would train 40 weeks a year. So I was on the road. I was the number one salesperson at the training company. And I did exactly what you suggested that your buddy did. I called it 4-a-days, and I would go to the American Banker. I would go to newspapers, local newspapers, and I would rip stuff out. One of my favorite authors is Harvey McKay. Harvey McKay is 92 years old. He's written amazing books, and his first book was Swim with the Sharks Without Being Eaten Alive. And in that book, he talked about the McKay 66, 66 things that he wanted his salespeople to know about the buyer, neutral of what they would buy from the company. And so I've kind of put that into what I call share of heart, hobbies, interests, passions, food allergies, where'd they go to school? Those little things are so vital to people. You know, there are two kinds of buyers, Alex. There are relational buyers and transactional buyers, but both buyers have a heart. And what you have to do, my wife always says, and she's kind of a bottom line lady. I've been married to her for almost 53 years. She said, if you want to get to my wallet, you need to go through my heart. And she's exactly right.
So it's all around the around trust, right? Trust-based selling is what you talk about. So, you know, for these bankers who are still leading with product, where should they start instead?
Yeah, that's a great question. First, let me talk to you a little bit about trust. The Trusted Advisor came out in 2000. So this is, again, before the internet was really popular, et cetera. So my wife happened to be at a bookstore, and I had just started a company, St. Meyer and Hubbard, with my good friend, Bob St. Meyer. And that's where we've done a lot of training. And so she buys this book. She says, I went to the bookstore and I bought this book because I thought it was really perfect for you. Just started the business. Trusted Advisor by Charles Green. And so I read the book. She said, you know, this is your company. And I read the book and I thought, you know what? I'm going to call Charlie. And I called Charlie. We've become great industry friends. I talk to him all the time. And one of the things that we always talk about is trust is earned, not stated. In other words, it really bugs the crap out of me when I see bankers say, I am your trusted advisor. No, you're not. I don't know you from a bag of donuts yet. Show me you're a trusted advisor, and then I'll maybe call you that. But so how does this happen? You know, the buyer has the answer. The banker has the questions. I've talked about that before. And so how do you open up great conversations? Well, I'll tell you one question not to ask. What keeps you awake at night? The 1980s called and they want their question back. That is just the most ridiculous question. I can't even believe it. So for me, I like to teach them a number of different kinds of things. I'll go over these pretty quickly. BNG, where have you been? Where are you now? Where are you going? This is so easy. Let's make this easy, okay? The second thing is, I want to go to a call with an insight question. Every call I make on banks, and I'm still doing a lot of training, and I had a call yesterday with a pretty large organization. And I always want to make sure I ask one question that I think no other sales training company person will ask, because that helps me stand out. So I call it the inside question. Mike Schultz and John Doerr wrote a great book a number of years ago called Inside Selling. And basically what they said is you're going to get back and you're going to win the business over anybody else if you always leave something of value, leave more than you take. So the second thing I want to know is, I want to ask an insight question. Questions like, Mr. Johnson, let me ask a question. What's one thing you would do in your business if you knew you wouldn't fail? And the business owner says, well, you know, and says the answer. And here's the power of the redirect, which is the next thing I want to talk about. Instead of the banker says, well, you know, and let me do my little dance. You know, we have a product for that and we're a relationship bank. Instead of that, they say, well, that's terrific. Why haven't you done that? Well, I haven't found a partner. Well, wait a second. Well, we are a partner. Nope. Redirect and say, what does a partner look like? What it would talk. And so now what I've got is an aspirational goal that could be longer term that probably their own bank doesn't even know about. And I understand what they need to do to get there. So down the line, I can help that. So the third thing is redirect. Another thing I want to know is, what I want to know some questions for me. So I always want to leave the call, the first call, with what I call the first call six. I want to know the time frame, the decision process, the criteria to buy, the budget. And I also want to know, is there any political stuff that will prevent us from doing business together? That's a time management question, because if they said, well, we've hated your bank since day one and we'll never do business with you, well, then why did you have me in to make a call? But at least I need to know that ahead of time. So first call six. The last thing that I always talk to bankers about is ask one more question. I call it the 97% question. Bob St. Meyer and I did a study early on in our careers, and we found out that 97% of the time you ask the question I'm about to tell you about, you get a negative answer. I'm not looking for the negative. I'm looking for the 3%, the positive. So the question is really simple. What, if anything, haven't we discussed about your personal or business financial situation that you'd like to talk about now? Now, you can say it any way you want. I've had bankers say it a whole bunch of different ways. But what I'm looking for is the 3%. So I'll tell you a quick story. So I'm coaching a guy in Michigan, and he didn't want to ask the question, but he knew I was with him, so he had to ask the question. So he asked the question. The buyer says, well, you know, he said, you're asking me questions about this company, but you haven't asked me anything about the other four companies that I own. Believe me, the banker is asking, what, if anything, haven't we discussed? He's asking that question now. So I really think that on the first call, Alex, if a banker does it really well, what they're going to see is that about 85% of the time, the buyer is talking. And the 85% of the time, the reason they're talking is the banker is asking questions about 85%. That's so different than what a lot of bankers do. And they talk 85% of the time. And that's such a big mistake.
And these are the power questions that you talk about, that you will coach about. So you do this in your first call, but what about the second meeting? What makes things happen and what kills momentum?
Yeah, deeper dive. I'll tell you what kills momentum is what you take, what you do, what you say, what you leave. But let's talk about the second call. Last year, 17% of bankers, commercial bankers, got into call number two with a prospect after call number one. And it takes about seven calls to make a sale on a middle market company. So why not? What's wrong? What you take, what you say, what you leave. So let's talk about what you take first. I believe that a business banker, commercial banker, should take several things with them on a business development call. Number one, two pens that work. I teach at a lot of banking schools, and I was introduced by the president of the Michigan Bankers Association in May. And his name is Rand Painter. He's a good friend. And Rand was a student of mine 25 years ago. And as he introduced me, he pulled out the two pens that worked. He said, this is one thing I remember from Jack Hubbard. And by the way, it's not because they might run out of ink, but because if I'm in front of the buyer may be a more formal person or an informal person. I'm going to make the buyer feel comfortable by pulling out the pen that makes them the most comfortable. Two pens that work. Second thing. Enough business cards plus one. Why the plus one? Well, first of all, if you and I are having a call and you say, well, I'll meet with you. And all of a sudden your CFO and your head of whatever decides to join. And I only bring one business card. Who am I going to leave that with? Well, I don't leave it with anybody. And that's just as bad. So I want to bring more in case you bring more. But the plus one is interesting. 95% of bankers don't do this little thing that's so important, and that's stop at the gatekeeper's desk at the end of the call, hand them a card, and say, Margaret, Jim, thanks so much for helping me to see Alex today. We had a great conversation. By the way, if you ever need me 24 hours a day, here's my home phone, my cell phone, my email. Please call me if there's anything I can do for you or the company. That's the second thing. The third thing is a notepad with lots of paper. Pretty simple. The fourth thing is some really good pre-boarded questions, BNG, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the last thing is a leave behind that has nothing to do with the bank. And we've talked about this. Is it a white paper? Is it an article? Is it something on tariffs? Is it whatever it is? What's current? And if you also don't have an open mind, you're never going to get back and call number two. Because the minute the buyer says something, you're going to start to pitch a product. You're not going to win when you pitch. You win the game when you catch.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Let's go back to LinkedIn, which that was really interesting. As you said, there's plenty of people out there who connect with you and then send you the follow-up pitch. How should lenders, commercial bankers, use LinkedIn to actually land meetings and sell?
Yeah, well, the first thing that I would say is if anybody that's watching or listening has a dog, they'll understand what I'm about to say. She was my best dog. We're dog lovers. We had a beagle. Her name was Taylor. And Taylor had routines. So we never had to worry about a clock in the house because we knew exactly what Taylor wanted. We knew when she got up, we knew when she ate, we knew when she wanted to take a walk, et cetera. So I'm really big, first of all, on getting yourself some atomic LinkedIn habits with a bow to Richard Clear. I like what's called 3x5x15 because that gives me the time as a banker that I can devote to LinkedIn. 3 things a day, 5 days a week that take 15 minutes. And whether that be I connect with 3 people, I comment on 3 posts, and I'll come back to comments in a second. I post something, whatever it might be. But I can do that during the day, 15 minutes. And I always like to do it in the morning. Let's talk about posting, too. By the way, Richard Vanderbloom is the guru of the LinkedIn algorithm. Every year he comes out with the LinkedIn algorithm study. This year, it's 250 pages. It's $170 US. And I got to tell you, Alex, it is the best money you could ever spend because it takes a deep dive into how to do all the things that I'm talking about. So for example, how do you get appointments with people? It's not connect and pitch. It's connect and provide value. So one of the secrets that a lot of bankers don't know, this is your audience is going to love this, is what I call the 10-to-1 content to comment ratio. And that is for every post you make, and you should post 3 days a week, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday are good days to post. When you post, if you comment 5 times on 5 other posts with good value before you post, then you post and you comment 5 times after you post, what will happen is, first of all, those 10 people will see your post. Secondly, the LinkedIn algorithm views you as more of a thought leader and your post is going to go to the top of the house and you'll get more views. So I would say, connect your brains out. You can get 30,000 connections. A lot of people say, I don't want 30,000 friends, and neither do I. But I'd love to have 30,000 people that I'm connected with. And by the way, you're welcome to connect with me on LinkedIn. I have about 16,000 connections. So, and I've done it one at a time. So connect. Provide content 3 days a week. No connect and pitch. Here's the bottom line with LinkedIn. 2 things. Number one, if you've mastered LinkedIn, if you've really had a great profile that's a resource, not a resume, if you have an about section that's about them, not you, if you post and you comment, here's what you need to understand, that LinkedIn will not close business for you. LinkedIn's job is to open doors. And great salespeople know innately it's time. Alex has commented on my posts. He's connected with me. I sent him something of value after I connected, and he responded back. Thanks so much, Jack. I follow you. I really enjoy your content. Those are potential appointment signals that I talk about. That's the time. It's not, hey, Alex, you want to connect? Boom, I connect. Hey, Alex, you want to buy my lead thing or you want to be a franchise owner? I get all this junk all the time. So Selling will happen when the time is right. LinkedIn opens doors. It doesn't close business.
How do you see bank leaders successfully coaching their teams to prospect and sell in this environment?
Oh, God, don't get me started. You know, the problem is they're not. What bankers will view as coaching is deal coaching. So you're Alex, you're a young banker or you're a veteran banker, and you go into Jack, the manager, and you say, hey, Jack, I need some advice. Sure, Alex, what can I do for you? Take a look at this deal for me. And so what I'm doing is I'm working with you on coaching. I'm not working with you to help you get better long term. So coaching is, after the pandemic, it's gotten worse. Here's the worst thing that I hear from banks. And by the way, when a bank says this to me, I walk. We hire adults. You know, Alex, my business partner and I went to the Masters a number of years ago, 2003, not a long time ago. And Mike Weir, a left-handed golfer from Canada, won the tournament. We spent so much time on the practice greens and the practice tees and stuff like that. And we watched Tiger and et cetera, et cetera. Everybody has a coach. Tiger is better than anybody on earth when it comes to golf. Maybe not now, Scotty is, but Tiger's great. So, but Tiger was listening to his coach and he would say, move your foot this much. And Tiger would do it. And he says, see how straight that went. So we hire adults is ridiculous. The second thing is, well, my banker will bring all their portfolio over, and so I don't have to worry about coaching them. No, that's a lie. Customers are tired of commuting with you. So coaching is almost non-existent. And you know what's really interesting, Alex? I talk to people in other industries, and they say it's just as bad. It's really, really horrible. So what I say to coaches is get some routines. Your job, and I always say to people, I want you to think about somebody that helped get you where you are today. And they kind of close their eyes and some even tear up. I say, what did that person do to help you get there? And I'm trying to make a learning point. And then I'll say, how did you get where you got today from your coaches in banking? And they're starting to go, okay, yeah, I sort of get that. And then I say, remember these three words when you coach someone. Ask, then tell. Ask, then tell. Alex, you went on a call with XYZ Manufacturing. How do you think that went? Alex, I'm on a joint call with you with XYZ Manufacturing. First thing Alex wants to know when he gets out of the call is, how did I do? Manager says, Alex, I got a lot of ideas for you here. But let me ask you, how did it go compared to how you thought it was going to go? Ask, then tell. And the other thing I would mention is be tailored. Get a routine. Make sure that you understand that your bankers need help and guidance. And if you have little children or big children, I guess they're always your children, that you always are coaching them. That's important to you. And they are your kids at the office. And your job is to make them better. And when you start to take it out of the context of, oh, I got to coach once a month, or I want to make my children at the office better, it's a different mindset.
Yeah, I love that. That's great. You have this concept of BEC, the blended environment conversations. And we think, you know, it's really perfect for today. So how do bankers master hybrid selling?
Well, look at us today. Look what we're doing here. Statistically, 82% of buyers want at least one virtual call from bankers. Now, when Bob St. Meyer and I had our company in 2020 and the pandemic hit, we had a bunch of people that we've hired and all we do is face-to-face training. What are we going to do? So we pivoted and we created some training that was hybrid. We also created a program called Remote Relationship Development, helping bankers understand how to sell remotely. We have lost that discipline, and because we've gotten lazy, because people say, okay, we need to be out face to face. Sure, we do that. But what happens, and this happened on the bank that I'm on the board of directors of, We had doctors in six different locations, and the banker was no way going to get those six doctors in the same room. So what she had to do was to work with the doctors in a hybrid or virtual mode to get them on screen together, and she was able to build the relationship. So number one, remember that virtual is forever. It's not going to go away. BEC, blended environment conversations, some virtual, some in person. What do you need to think about? I'll give you four things. Number one, background. What is in your background? What do people see? I see the nice buildings there. You've got my office here. The second thing is lighting and sound. Do we sound good? Do we look good on camera? Are we in front of the window versus behind the window? All those things are really important. If you have fake lighting, does it create a shadow? All those little things are really, really important. So those are two things. The third thing is look at the green dot. Look at the camera. Too often what happens is we're looking at each other and we should be looking at the green dot. So look at the camera, and bankers often say, okay, how do I not do that? I've got some notes over here. How do I not look at the camera and look? I say, well, do you watch the news? Well, newscasters in every country in the world uses a teleprompter. So what they do is they look at the green dot, and that's where the teleprompter is. So what I say, the third thing to do is be a turkey. We developed something called turkey feathering, which is taking the questions that we talked about before and putting them around your computer. Don't cover up the green dot. And now you can glance at the questions and still look at the potential buyer. Here's number four. Follow an expert. There is a great woman in the United States. Her name is Julie Hansen. She wrote a best-selling book called Look Me in the Eye. If you want to learn how to be a great virtual seller, even if it's part-time, Julie's book is outstanding. It's not going away, Alex. It's a forever thing.
Of course, absolutely. What's one old school sales habit that still works and one that needs to be retired for good?
Well, I'll tell you some stuff that works. Have a sales process. There's a guy named Barry Traylor who does the sales performance survey every year. And one of the things he talks about is the five levels of sales processes. And he's added the fifth this year, which is adding AI into the mix. If you don't have a sales process, you have a tower of Babel. Make sure that you have a lot of great tools. Tools like Vertical IQ in the US, RelPro, LinkedIn Sales Navigator, coaching, leadership, and how to keep score. One of the things that we're seeing banks do successfully to keep doing is what we call lead measure scorecards. How many calls did you make? How many sales did you make? Everything in between my two hands are coaching moments. The only way you create coaching moments is lead measures. Time to close, average deal size, the ratio of prospects to calls, to first calls, to second calls. Those are coaching moments. Keep doing all those things. What you need to stop doing in a relationship environment is blitzes and cold calls. It makes no sense. The latest statistic that I've seen is cold calls, 1% effective. I don't know about you. I don't have a billion years to sell. So I want to use LinkedIn, referrals, all the things we've talked about to get in the door. What's a blitz? A blitz is 20 branch managers in a marketplace on Tuesday morning. We're going to go out and get thrown out of 16 billion buildings. God, I can't wait for that to happen. And the buyer comes to the office and goes, geez, about 9 o'clock, I hope some banker I don't know from a bag of donuts comes in and upsets my entire office. That's not a feel good. So we got to stop doing that in a relationship environment.
I remember those. I remember being at a bank when people were doing blitzes. Everybody went to Dunkin' Donuts, grab a whole bunch of donuts, and showed up at offices trying to sell commercial loans.
Then they leave a mug or a brochure and they think, well, let me go back to the office and sit and wait and see if somebody calls. Well, you can wait forever. That's not going to happen.
You've trained generations of bankers. What advice are you giving the very next one you're training?
Yeah, I would say learn the industry is number one. Understand the nuances of the industry. Number two, read. I read, as I mentioned, a sales book a week. I need to get better, even though I've done this for a long, long time. Follow great people. To me, if I'm a banker and you said, I can only follow one person, it's Chris Nichols. Chris Nichols is the most amazing, most intelligent, most innovative banker I have ever met in my life. And I look at his content all the time. That's what's really important. And the last thing I'll tell you, if you're a young person and you're getting into the industry, control what you control. You control your sales process. You control what you do, your behaviors and activities. Understand that someday the bank is going to get merged out from under you. If you know how to sell, you'll control your destiny.
I second the Chris Nichols recommendation for sure. So, Jack, if our listeners walk away with just one idea from you today, what should it be?
Be a resource. Add value at every level. Educate. When you do that, you remove the commoditization that banking is well known for, and you become a resource man.
Thanks so much, Jack, for being a straight shooter with us and a champion to trust-based sales. That's it for today at Banking Reinvented, Unlock Growth Mode. If you're ready to lead with value, not volume, this is the conversation to play again and again. Thanks, Jack.
Thank you, Alex. Great to be with you.
You've been listening to Banking Reinvented by Backcase. Be sure to follow us on LinkedIn, where we share key takeaways, exclusive content, and behind-the-scenes perspectives to help your bank lead the charge toward modern growth.